tell the stories. Time to make sure that our people can understand and come together. Understand that there is no separation. You, me, we're the same. Our minds are creative. Our stories, and we talk about solutions. We're on the right track. We're standing together. Join us on These Changing Times Radio.
And welcome everyone to Where the Wild Things Grow on These Changing Times Radio, also being broadcast on awakeradio.co.uk, awake.us, 1800online.weebly.com, shazizradio.com, Just Us Radio, also United We Strike Radio, turtleislandnews.info, and I think that's about it, and I'd like to welcome Max to the show. And Max, how are you doing? It's so wonderful to have you on the show. I know you're really, really busy. You've been working tirelessly to make sure that the people get the message out there that there are things that we can do, and we should be about doing them. And I wanna say it's an honor to be able to sit here and speak with you tonight on these topics, but I know you've been busy, and if you want, you can fill us in on a little bit of what you've been doing before we get into the discussion, if you'd like.
Well, thanks for having me on, Patty. It's always a pleasure to be here. I've actually been touring around Europe doing a whole bunch of speaking dates in Europe, which has been good. It's been great to get the message out to people. I'm actually preparing to go back into Gaza Strip in about 2 weeks. I'll be heading in there around about the 14th. So that's something I'm looking forward to as well. But then I'll get back from there probably about mid-October and get cracking on finishing the documentary that I started last year and on making a new documentary about Gaza Strip as well. So, yeah, pretty busy. But it's always good to keep busy. It's good.
Well, yeah, it is. And I know, you know, I've followed you for quite a few years now, and I've been amazed that, you know, we all started out in this very simply as people concerned, people wanting to learn more about the issues that we were facing. And of course, there was that rabbit hole that we all fell down into. It's not always been an easy road, and we've been up against a lot of flack from the thugs that be, so to speak. And I know through the years listening to you and hearing about your experiences and the wisdoms that you've gained through there, through your experiences, it's been a teaching method for many, many of us who you know, we start out as very innocent in this, just thinking, oh, it's just the bankers, you know, oh, it's just the government. Oh, it's just the health system, and not realizing exactly how bad the problem is of this control grid that has manufactured our whole lives up till this point. And coming to grips with that, it helps to have someone there who can speak to these things with some type of authority of mind, of strength, you know, of research, backing, and of experiences. So it's very important tonight that I want to discuss with you some of these issues and the solutions that we have. And one of the main issues that we have that I find, Max, is that the people, they're not catching on. It seems as if there are blinders and muffles on their ears, because even though we can show them there are chemtrails in the sky, even though we can show them that the bankers have taken their money and shifted it to offshore and to other places, taking it away from us, even though our government is creating this control grid that is actually coming into our homes now to tell us how to live, eat, breathe, and sleep, they're still not being motivated to be able to stand up and say, this is my problem too, and I want to do something about it. And this is mostly what I want to see if we can get into tonight, to figure out how we could, because we do have solutions, Max. We have many, many solutions, some of them of which you are part of, that I want to talk about here a little bit later. But I don't understand the reasoning or the lack of reasoning in the people today. I know that this manipulation is well set and has been going on for generations upon generations, yet here we are, aware and asking the questions and delving into the issues to find the solutions. But we're being met with sort of like blank stares, and people feel that they don't have the power, they don't have the ability to stand for themselves. And I wanted you to speak to that a little bit, if you could.
Well, it isn't just that people don't have the ability to stand for themselves. It's that they just don't realize that the problem is as real as it is. You know, it's a huge challenge to people's reality, just bringing them this information. You're basically confronting their whole reality. It's hugely, hugely confrontational for them. And you can tell people about the chemtrails. You can tell them what's going on, and they look at you with a blank stare, because it's too far away from their reality for it to really register. They can look at it and they can say, okay, there's a problem there, but they can't see the significance of it, because it's too much of a paradigm shift. It's almost like cognitive dissonance that they go into. It's right there in their face, but they won't look at it because they're scared to. It's too much of a shift for them to think outside of that box. You know, people have gone through their whole lives thinking the world is completely different to what it is. So when you come along and tell them that actually it's like this, it's hugely confrontational. And that's the problem. But again, we've got things such as fluoride. We've got the electromagnetic grid as well, which I believe keeps people just disconnected. It keeps them in a state of impaired cognitive function, if you will. It's just a matter of fact. It's just that the way people's lives are, they're swimming in this electromagnetic soup. They're consuming fluoride products all the time, and they're programmed. They're programmed by the television. They're programmed into this false reality. They believe what the newspapers tell them. They've got their lives into this kind of a routine, and they're not prepared to step outside the routine because they've found something that works for them. You know, they're able to just keep their head above water, and everything just kind of works if they stay in this routine. And they're not interested in someone coming along and challenging this routine or challenging their paradigm. But I don't think we need the entire world to wake up. We need the world to respect each other. I mean, we could have respectful communities that are prepared to stand up with a strong communal response to anything the government may put forth. But we don't need all of these people to be awake, in inverted commas. We just need them to have the respect for each other to want to stand together when they see a problem. You know, if they see someone being persecuted, we want people that are willing to stand up for these people if they see that it's injustice, you know. And we don't have that because we don't have respectful communities, where people are sort of too scared to stand up. They're too scared to, you know, peek outside of the curtains if they see a police car in the street, you know. So it's overcoming this, and I think it all comes down to respect. That's the biggest problem we've got, is this ultra respect in our community, and that is the solution to the whole problem, really, because it's all about divide and conquer. This whole system is designed to keep us divided. So if we can get some unity back in our community, there's a huge part of the problem solved straight away, because a strong communal response will combat most things the government puts forth. But we have to have that. We're not going to have that without respect. So it's finding ways of getting respect for people and finding ways of what's going to actually get their attention in a way they can understand. You know, people can only really understand money at the moment, money, politics, tax, this sort of stuff. So we need to find ways of using these things to get their attention to the fact that there's a problem with the system, you know. It's getting their attention. That's the hardest part, is getting their attention. I mean, fracking, chemtrails, all these things, you'll get their attention for a little while, but they're so busy running on the treadmill that they just don't have time to think about it properly. And again, it's a huge shift to their paradigm. It's a huge challenge to their reality. So often they're not prepared to put any time into it at all. So we need to find a way of getting a foot in the door and getting their attention in some way that they can understand, you know.
Well, yeah, do you think also that it has a lot to do with, you know, a lot of times you can tell someone there's a storm coming and it's bringing with it damaging hail and high winds, destructive winds, and the sun is shining above them, and as long as that sun is shining, they don't feel the urgency, they don't feel the need, and a lot of the people today, they are struggling. Like you said, in the monetary system, but then that has been part and parcel for this type of system that we have set up off and on. There's always been periods of growth and periods of depression and things like this. Do you think it's that it's not knocking on their door, so to speak? Well, is the reason why many of them are kind of lackadaisical in their view? They can agree with you and say, yes, the government's corrupt and them trying to take away our constitutional rights is wrong, but it hasn't happened to me yet, therefore I'm not that concerned. Do you think that might be a part of it also?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. People don't really pay attention until it's knocking on their door. That's the thing. It's always been that way. And it's unfortunate. You know, people are kept in a kind of, you know, little bubble of it's okay in my backyard, so it's all good. I won't pay attention. And that's a real problem. But it kind of is knocking on their back door now. It is getting to a point where people are realizing that there's a problem. But it's been such a gradual thing. You know, we're just used to prices going up. We're used to inflation. We're used to things becoming slowly more difficult. And we expect it to, because we believe the earth is running out of resources and global warming and all the stuff that we're fed, that we believe it has to get worse because we're the problem, you know, and we don't really look above that. We don't really look at, well, what caused it? You know, actually it's this system is the problem. It's this economic model that's the problem. The economic model, which is designed to function on a state of permanent growth, can only ever result in turning the world into a rubbish tip, and that's what it's doing. And we need to address that. But it's just getting people's awareness of it. But it's been such a gradual thing that they just expect it. They just expect the world to get worse, and they think the government will fix it when it can, you know. It's a weird program that we're running, but people just kind of expect it, and they don't believe there is a solution often, or they think, well, it will get better once the economy improves and once they create some new job scheme or whatever, things will get better. They think it's all about the economic model. They think that's what reality is, you know. But the economic model is the heart of the problem, really. The private issuance of currency and this economic system, which constrains us and constrains our every move and controls our society. That's the problem. And it'll have to get to a point, I suppose, where it is in people's backyards before they're prepared to stand up and do something about it. But it is getting to that point very rapidly these days. It's sort of coming to everybody. I think that's why they're escalating all these wars around the place, trying to keep people distracted with wars to save them really looking at this economic system too much. You know? Again, the wars cause people to expect them to have to tighten their belts as well. because there's all this military spending going on. So, you know.
Right, exactly, and you're right about that. I mean, the amount of encroachment on other countries for things such as resources and the amount of wars that we here have been a party to. Even though I don't put myself in league with this illegal regime that has taken over our country, but the process is still the same. In each and every country, this need to go beyond their borders to scrounge up any resources that are available. And a lot of these wars that are being fought right now have nothing to do with the country itself that is at war, although the patriotic movement is stating that, oh, yes, this is to protect our borders. It's to me, very laughable that we have, you know, being aware, we have this thing called aggression for resources, but that's okay, yet we have a border problem and issue there that they're jumping on and they're putting out there and they're putting all the fear out there, which is, you know, in a way, Max, you have these people in the United States, and they are looking at this border crossing with Mexico as if these illegal immigrants coming over are going to be the downfall of this country. And I understand where they're coming from, but to me it is adverse to what we all want. If we are looking for a free society where people can come together in respect and to be able to pursue life on their own terms without doing harm to another person, then there should be no borders. Knowledge should not be something that is purchased or bought. The solutions that we have should be implemented outside of a monetary system. Yet the way that they create these little pockets of angst against each one of us, they put us at odds with each other to keep us, like you said, divided, whereas we should be saying to all the people in Mexico and wherever, you know, we need to stand together. We need to stop fighting over a parcel of land or an ideal that coming across that imaginary line is going to change your life in any way. That is the true joke of it all, is that we still buy into this even though we are aware. We think that these divisions that they put before us, like Republican, Democrat, or bankers versus the Vatican and all of these things are separate entities to where we must take sides. And the whole equation is the problem. The whole equation is the issue. The government is tied to the monetary system, is tied to the banks, is tied to the Vatican, is tied to the Zionists, is tied to the war machine, is tied to the immigration policies. All of these things are the same culprit. And I think that a lot of us have fallen into that we still have to pick sides. You know, there's still a right way to do things and a wrong way to do things, yet we are lockstep in step with what the government is trying to do, which is keep us at odds with each other.
Well, yeah, divide and conquer. That's the whole thing. I mean, the last thing that it would be a threat to America would be illegal immigration. I mean, the biggest threat that America faces is its government and the amount of illegal wars that it's involved in. I mean, look at the drone strikes in Pakistan. They worked out the other day they're killing 49 people for every one possible terrorist that they're killing with these drone strikes. So one in 50 they're actually getting. The rest of the other 49 people are just collateral damage. It's outrageous, and this is what they're doing around the planet. Now, they wonder why the world hates the West and why all these wars keep happening. You know? We are the ones who create all of them. You know, but how do we get out of this situation? How do we rein our governments in? That's the question. We've got to understand what our position is in society, that these are just public trustees that we elect to manage our infrastructure for us, but we can't do anything without the strength of the community. So we need to find a way of getting this strength back in our community. And we need to find a way of controlling the money system. See, all of what these wars are about, a lot of the posturing that they do in Ukraine and all of these different theaters of conflict all around the planet, they're not only about resources, it's also about keeping the U.S. economy afloat, keeping the petrodollar there and as the global reserve currency. They don't want anything that's going to undermine the petrodollar. And with Ukraine, I mean, Ukraine is a very strategic area. There's a book that was put out by Zbigniew Brzezinski called The Grand Chessboard, came out in 1997, where they actually talked about a theater of conflict in Ukraine because it was such a strategically valuable area. You've got a lot of Russian pipelines going through there, supplying gas to Europe and all sorts of stuff. So there's all sorts of reasons why this is going on in Ukraine. And there's also, it's interesting that the amount of fracking in England at the moment, the amount of coal seam gas harvesting in England, they've actually got a surplus of gas in England. But they're still fracking, but they've got a surplus of gas. They've got no real market for it. So by cutting off the pipeline from Russia through to Europe, through Ukraine, they've also given themselves a market for British gas if they are able to push this conflict and keep it going and keep these sanctions happening. So there's all sorts of reasons for this, usually to support the economic model and to make sure the petrodollar stays as the global reserve currency. That's what it's all about. See, war is what keeps the American economy floating at the moment. Without conflict, the whole American economy would crash very quickly. You've got to have this conflict because that's the only thing that generates spending. That's the only thing that keeps the factories going, keeps the whole thing going. It's the war machine. And America's fast become like that. It's very, you know, it's hard to get any work in America outside military or hospitality these days. I mean, even if you're working in a factory, there's some part in that factory that's made for some tank somewhere or something, you know, and it's spread out all across the country. So every single state in the United States manufactures something for the military. So it's kind of what keeps it going. And the way they've degraded the society, you've got so many homeless people now in the United States, there's so much unemployment, that the only really attractive job you can get is in the military as well. It's very attractive for young guys to want to join the military, even young women to join the military, because it's a high-paid job. You're guaranteed employment. There's plenty of wars that we're creating. So, you know, it's all theater. Depopulation, a lot of it is about depopulation. Ethnic cleansing, depopulation, it takes many forms. Depopulation, I mean, just the impoverishment of the society is a form of depopulation. Sending people off to die and kill other people's children in theaters of conflict all around the world is depopulation. There's so many methods that they use. But it's about eliminating these useless eaters, you know, through any mechanism that they can, and just bringing this control grid down. And people won't notice it until it's in their backyard. And the unfortunate thing is they do expect things to get worse because they're trained to believe that that's what life is about. The news teaches them this all the time. And so it's just going the way it's supposed to go. I mean, it's going the way. People say the system's broken. It's not really broken at all. It's doing exactly what it's designed to do. But our one hope is that people will wake up in time, and I think they are. I think the more we can do shows like this, the more we can put a positive message out there and help people see that though we do have problems, there are actually ways of fixing them. All these problems actually provide opportunities for us. All we have to do is embrace these opportunities. I think people are realizing that it's about time we stepped into our power and woke up to ourselves. And so, yeah, I just say bring it on, because the more people, you know, the more they bring it on, the more people they wake up, and that's the way it's going. You know, the government's waking up more people than I possibly could, because the government is so blatantly in your face corrupt now, and so many people can see it now, that it's doing a good thing. It's doing us a favor in many ways, you know. Without this global situation happening, we wouldn't have this global awakening happening. It's just being careful what people wake up into, hoping that people wake up into a state of positive action rather than anger and violence or desperation or anything like that. Provide this safety net for people. I think that's what a conscientious alternate media would do. It would provide a safety net for people and help them realize that there are others that think the same as they do, and there are ways out of this situation.
you know, that's very, very important. And one of the things that I do want to discuss with you a little bit later on, but I want to ask you a question right now, as far as knowing that, you know, the U.S. government, as corrupt as it is just a mirror of every other government in power, especially where there's a World Bank, a central bank involved. I've seen it over and over and over. There's even, you know, when the leaders of the country get up on the podium to try to incite the people into agreeing to go to war, they use the same words. It's almost as if they've read the same cue card. So I don't see any difference between this government or the European governments or any of the other governments. I think they're all in lockstep to bring in this new world order. Do you think that there's any way that the governments themselves and the systems that they control are in any way salvageable for a future devoid of this type of control?
Look, I think that the system that we've got could work if we were to change our consciousness. The problem is that people look at this situation and they think, well, we need to pull this government down and we need to construct a new system and put that up in its place. But they don't realize that if we were to change our heart space and start operating in a respectful manner to one another, start operating according to moral parameters rather than legal parameters, start questioning any legislation which causes us to deviate from our moral compass, and start acting from respect in all that we do, then the world would have to change with us. The system would have to change around our new state of consciousness. It would be an organic thing. See, we can't construct a new system and say, okay, well, here is a workable model. We can step out of this reality and into this new reality. Because you'll find people won't do it. People are too lazy to even want to think about some new system, and they're scared of any new system. You've got the whole alternate media out there that will vilify any new system that you bring forth and vilify it as being the new world order. Any type of control grid at all you try to bring in, people will say this is the new world order. It's all about control. And in many cases, they might be right. But even if you try to do something like this, people won't go for it. They just won't do it. Their minds won't work that way. But if they were to respect each other and always operate out of respect, then this system must change around our new state of consciousness, and it would be an organic thing. We don't need to deconstruct or reconstruct anything. All we need to do is reconstruct the way we approach other people, reconstruct the way we approach reality, change our heart space, change what our intention is. Because even if we were to pull this system down and construct a new one and put it in place, if we haven't changed our heart space, then we're just going to end up back where we are now. If we don't change that, if we don't change what's inside us, then nothing else is going to work. That's why people say, you know, you can change the world by changing the inner world. You can, but you have to then apply it to the world around you. You know, change your inner world, change the way you perceive yourself and change the way you interact with people, but then interact with them. Do that. You know, apply it to the world around you. Do what is right in all that you do, and question anything which causes you to deviate from your moral compass. Question authority on any single occasion that you have the opportunity to do so. You know, question why you would be required to do something which is immoral, you know, which is what this system is. There's so much about this system which causes us to step outside of our moral compass, but we don't ever question it, and we need to start doing that. That's when real change will happen, and that's why we don't need to deconstruct or reconstruct anything, you know, because all of these things will require people to think and step outside of a reality that they're comfortable in and into one that they're unsure of, and they're not going to do it, and you're going to end up in endless debate about things, and it's never really going to go anywhere. That's why I don't believe any new system anybody has ever offered has ever had any hope of actually working, because people aren't prepared to put that type of time and effort into it. And if they haven't changed their heart space anyway, then it's not going to matter. It doesn't matter what system we construct. If we haven't changed what's in our heart and changed the way we interact with people and started operating out of respect for one another, then nothing's going to work anyway. And if we do that, then everything will change by default. So that's really where the focus has to be. The focus has to be on community, and it has to be on changing your own personal heart center and the way you interact with people around you. Once you do that and other people start following suit, then the world has to change with us. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do. I do. And I have a couple of questions that were put for you that you had before, and that was you and Ken O'Keefe had built a school for the kids. And the question is that school still in use, do you know, or has it been bombed?
I have no idea, actually. I'm going over there in 2 weeks, and I intend to go and check on it. I was actually thinking about it this morning, wondering whether it would still be there. I know that the area where we built that schoolroom was subject to heavy shelling, so I really have no idea. But I'm going to go over there, and that's one of the reasons I want to go there, is to check up on the schoolroom and to find some of the kids that we built it for and just check up on them. There's a whole bunch of stuff I want to do while I'm over there. I want to go and make a documentary about how much it's changed and just show the real situation on the ground over there. So that's the intention of going over there in 2 weeks from now. I'll be able to answer that question for you when I get back.
Okay, that's wonderful. We will look forward to that also. I also have another question that deals with a program that you're involved with, I think, and that's the Full Circle Project. If you'd like to speak on that, the question is, I'd like to know what the Full Circle Program, if it is going, and I'd like to know your thoughts about why people are so apathetic, even though they can see what's happening. I think we've already answered that question. But they'd like to know how the Circle Program is going.
Okay, the Full Circle Project has been kind of sitting there in its infancy for the last 12 months. It's just been kind of sitting there gathering dust, waiting for me to get active with it. And it's dependent on me finishing this documentary that I'm halfway through making at the moment, which I've actually got on the back burner while I go to Gaza. So I've got all sorts of stuff on the go. But it's going to be launched in earnest in 2015. I've actually got someone in Spain who's helping me manage the whole thing at the moment. It's going to consist of a series of workshops that I'm going to take around the planet to as many places as I can, just to help communities become empowered again and to start to understand how to deal with their governments, how to deal with their local councils, and to start breaking down the barriers in our communities, putting the power back into the hands of our communities. We have to do this. We've got to really start some sort of a grassroots movement that isn't really a movement. It's just a new understanding that people have, a new way of approaching reality that people have, because that's how we're going to change things. I want to focus on trying to regain control of the money system is a big part of it. The private issuance of currency is a big part of this control grid. So I want to address that. I want to address the destruction of the Amazon rainforest, what we're doing there. And again, this all comes back to the economic model. So it's important that we make a difference in our own countries and change the economic system in our own countries, because that's the only way we're really going to save the Amazon as well. And this is the lungs of the earth. I did intend on buying lots of land in the Amazon to hopefully put back in control of the natives in the country, the native cultures in the country. But I'm finding that Western companies are going in there and they're decimating these areas anyway. So it's got to come back to us regaining control of the system in our own countries. So that's basically what the Full Circle Project is going to be about. Try to bring us full circle back to a state of abundance, back to our natural state of abundance. Bring us full circle back to the point where we realize that we are actually the top of the food chain, that we created society, society created government, government created all these statute laws and politicians and all this stuff. These guys are way down the food chain. We just have to regain control of ourselves, and that way we will regain control of the systems that are in place in our various countries. That's what I believe anyway. It's got to start with grassroots action with the people themselves. And it's got to change with people changing their own heart space and changing the way they interact with people. So it's a lot of the things we just talked about. I mean, this is what the Full Circle Project is going to be aimed at doing. It's got to be something that's going to empower the people. I want to get as many speakers involved as I can. Anybody that I've heard that's actually putting a proper message out there, something true, something powerful, I want to try to get as many of these people involved as possible in the presentations and just see what we can do. We've got to make a difference. And I want to use something. I want to create some sort of a workshop whereby we can then kind of leave it behind and move on to the next town and leave that kind of a template in place so they can continue these meetings once a month or once a week or whatever and keep the ball rolling, keep things happening in their community. You know, start communal gardens, start even blitzing people's houses, you know, with Adobe and all sorts of stuff. These are just ways of creating sustainable housing for people. Think all sorts of things we can do in our communities and things that are going to push the envelope with your local councils as well, because I think by pushing the envelope with these people, you demonstrate to the rest of the community how corrupt your local governments actually are. Because if you're doing something which is good for people and it's going to empower the community, and then suddenly your local council or government comes along and tries to stop you, well, it causes the other people to raise their heads up a little bit and question why the government would be stopping you doing something which is good for the community. You know, so you've got to find ways of pushing the envelope with these people and empowering our communities and giving people the strength that they need and the confidence they need to stand up against this system. So that's basically what I want to do with Full Circle Project.
Max, how are the chemtrails going over there?
Yeah, they're going everywhere. I can't really see them at the moment. It's cloudy today, but we do get quite a lot of chemtrails here on the East Coast, yeah.
Unfortunately, I've seen no evidence in Perth, so I'm just taking people's words for it all around the world that it really is happening.
Well, yeah, it is. It's shocking in Europe and England, in Portugal when I was just there. Portugal, Spain, Europe, Germany, Denmark, lots and lots of chemtrails in all of these countries, most especially in UK and in Portugal when I was there. Absolutely shocking. So, yeah, it's happening everywhere, brother. Not happening in Israel, though. It's not happening in Palestine. That's interesting.
Well, speaking on the chemtrails, we have a lot of them here in the U.S., and I think that what they are trying to do here in the U.S. is change the weather patterns. They are using the chemtrails to create a drought in some areas and flooding in other areas. We have in the eastern part of the U.S. where they've actually had so much torrential rain that it has flooded farmland, and the government has moved in and declared it flood territory, and therefore they've gone in and bought the people out because they said they couldn't be insured anymore. Their crops wouldn't be insured and all this. Then we have in the west the chemtrails that are causing that are part and parcel to the drought that is occurring there, and they're going and taking the water rights away from the landowners, the farmers, the ranchers, and things like this, then going in and taking the land also. So I think that this is also being used as a mechanism to institute Agenda 21 and the land grab that's going on. Do you think so, Max?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, chemtrails are a multi-platform delivery system. They can do all sorts of things with them. They can control the weather. They can control what's going on with the soil, put aluminium in the soil so you've got to buy Monsanto crops. I mean, we've seen, you know, many trees dying around the place, people having a very hard time growing vegetables these days. Climate remediation, geoengineering, the whole lot of it. There's all sorts of things they do with this spraying in the sky. And people just don't seem to see it. It's amazing. It's right there in their faces, but they just, again, they stare at it with a blank stare. They just can't perceive that it would be real, but it is. But yeah, it's all sorts of things they do with chemtrails. So it wouldn't surprise me if it's being used to control the weather in the United States at all.
Yeah, there has also been some talk that it's being used to deliver virus and things like this to different parts of the country and such like this. But I agree, you know, I have my own family members who I consider well informed on chemtrails and government and all this, but I can take them outside and I can say, look at the chemtrails, and I can tell them in an hour's time we'll have thick cloud cover and they'll see it happening, but there's no urgency, there's no worry because they're not feeling it. They don't feel the consequences of what is happening, and they don't equate the loss of indigenous plants or the trees that are now suffering and dying. They don't equate that to the chemtrails because they don't see the chemtrail touching the tree and the tree dying. I think this is a lot of the issue that we have with people not being able to see it for what it is. It's like when they did the documentary of what in the world are they spraying, and they went to the halls of Congress. The congressman said, we're not even doing this. We just discussed it. It's not being done. And they walked outside with their cameras, and the chemtrails were above Congress. So this is what we're dealing with, I think, with the chemtrails like we are with everything else. It's not reaching out and actually harming them to the point to where they are recognizing it for what it is, you know. They can hear the snake in the grass, but they can't see it, so it's not a danger to them, so to speak.
Well, yeah, you know, it's way off there in the sky. It's off in the distance, isn't it? And the sky is so big. Oh, there's so much sky. It doesn't affect me. That's way up there in the atmosphere, you know. It's a weird thing, cognitive dissonance, and that's just the way people are. And yet you can look at the horizon and you can notice that there's a mist between you and buildings that are quite close and things that are quite close. There's sort of a mist there quite often now. So you are breathing this stuff in. It is everywhere. But again, like you say, people can't see it. They can't see it as some sort of a beast. It's not green colored and doesn't turn their skin, mottled. So they don't notice it as being real, you know. It's just the way people are. It's a program. It's way off there in the sky, isn't it? It's not really close. It's not really affecting me, is it, you know?
Another issue that we have, because of Monsanto, because of the chemtrails and the toxins, the aluminum oxide that is being rained down, as Zeitz put in the chat below, he's had a little bit of trouble with his mic. But there are people like Jeff Lawton, and he's got this brilliant way of allowing the earth through permaculture to bring back its own abundance and turning deserts into oases of edible and nutritious plants and herbs for the people. Doing this in record amounts of time, actually, there are a lot of systems like this that can be done, yet if we are dealing with this bombardment on a daily basis from the sky and from the Monsanto and their genetic manipulations and adulteration of normal growing plants through pollination and stuff, how are we going to grow our plants in the future? Or do you think we have a future where we will be able to use the soil? Will we have to build our own soil? Will we have to start growing our plants in structures like greenhouses underground? If this keeps on going, you know, Max, we're going to soon run out of abundant and fertile land, as well as the ability to grow nutritious plants and food.
Well, that's the problem. That's the thing, is that is the amount of spraying is affecting the soil in a very adverse way. And even if you've got permaculture gardens, a lot of people are finding that these gardens aren't quite producing as well as they should be or could be. And it's because the soil is changing. The soil is becoming far too alkaline. We're finding that there's far more aluminium in the soil, all of the stuff that's being rained down on them from the spraying that goes on in the sky. So eventually it'll be at the point where we've got to use Monsanto seed and all of this sort of stuff, because that's the only thing that is going to grow in this aluminium-rich soil. That's the problem that we face. So even if you're growing, you know, good organic food, it's not going to work in the soil. So we need to look at this, and people, I mean, it's a good idea if people can start analyzing this soil, get sort of collect some and get it analyzed and just see what the content of aluminium and barium and stuff in their soil is, see what the alkalinity of their soil is like now, because we're finding that soils are getting far too alkaline. And that we're heading for some real trouble if we don't address this. And when you look at it, you see this alkalinity in the soil and you see these barium and aluminium and strontium and all sorts of things that are appearing in the soil, you've got to ask yourself where it's coming from. And the only common denominator is the spraying in the sky. So that's where it's coming from. So this is something that may help people to wake up to this a little bit. But that's what farmers need to be looking at. If they're having a hard time with the production of their crops, even people with permaculture gardens, they need to check out the content of their soil and see what's in it, see what sort of additives may be in there that weren't in there a few years ago.
Right. You know, I planted this year, I planted my heirloom seeds, and that I do want to talk to you about. I'll see if Zeitz has anything else he wants to ask you. Zeitz, did you want to... pose a question to Max. Are you with us?
Max, the Ubuntu system, you were saying that it's too much of a movement for humanity to grasp this system. Would you like to explain a bit about Ubuntu, any flaws in it, please?
Yeah, I can. Look, I actually like the idea of the Ubuntu system. I think it's a good idea. My problem is that it's so alien to people. I just don't think people will go for it quickly enough. I think it would be somewhere where we would end up naturally if we were to change our mindset, change our heart space. I think if we were to, as I was talking earlier, if we were to start acting according to moral parameters rather than legal parameters, the system would naturally change around us, and we'd find that in a period of a generation or so, we'd probably be in a situation where we had something like Ubuntu in place. You know, it would probably end up morphing into something like that. The problem with it, I think the problem with any type of system, any type of new structured system that you put there, is there's so many people that are in their comfort zones that they're just not going to be prepared to step out of this and into that, especially into something that is so alien to them, the whole concept of not having any money. This is a very alien concept to people, you know. So, you know.
The theory is, Max, that if a community starts dealing in their bartering system just with their neighbours, that the commercial system just about collapses because nobody's spending any money. And it could grow and grow and grow like that.
Well, it could. I mean, it could. I mean, it's a way of, I mean, sure, you could do this and put it in place and see how it works, but there's still going to be so many people that support the commercial system, and it's going to take a lot to get that many people to step out of the commercial system. It's the devil they know. You know what I mean? It's just the way the devil they know. They're not prepared to step into something new, especially not something they have to think about. Unfortunately, I believe that if we were to change our heart space and change the way we interact with people, we'd end up going that way anyway. We'd end up stepping into something like that just by default. But giving people a constructed idea like this and saying, well, here's a new model. We can step out of this model and into this new one. You'll get some people that'll want to do it, but you'll get a lot of people that won't. You know, so, and frankly, like, we're running out of time. We're really running out of time. I mean, the amount of control that this system is exerting over people now, and the way they're escalating it with this whole ISIS thing and all this military posturing all around the planet, they're really, really trying to lock people down. So, I mean, I think it's a great attempt. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with Michael Tellinger or anything wrong with the Ubuntu system at all. I think it's a great idea. I just don't know if people will go for it that quickly. You know what I mean?
Understood, Max. There's another point, too. I get the feeling that we're having a spiritual warfare on planet Earth. And when people start thinking with their hearts and actually do something about it rather than say, oh, yeah, she'll be right, mate, we can change this planet around. But we have a very special guest on These Changing Times. Her name is Barbara Threecrow, And she is saying we will never get rid of evil. It's part of creation, but humanity just has to overcome it. Would you have any comments?
Look, I think evil is necessary. I think without evil, we don't have the choice to not be evil. But without the choice to go wrong, we don't have the choice to not go wrong. We don't have the choice to do good if we don't have the choice to do bad. If we didn't have that choice, what would it all be about? You know, it's what we do with it. It's what we do with it. We can use evil as a mechanism by which to grow, by which to understand ourselves a little bit better, or we can indulge ourselves in it. The choice is ours to do. But it needs to be there. Otherwise, what would the experience be about? You know? I think it serves a purpose. Without evil, we wouldn't have this grand awakening happening. We wouldn't have the choice not to be evil. We wouldn't have the choice to be good. So I think it serves a purpose. I think it's necessary for human growth. It's necessary for the experience to mean something, you know?
The more people become awakened, the more the evil seems to ramp up the game. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, it's a defense mechanism. I think a lot of what the government is doing at the moment, a lot of what the psychopaths who believe they control the world are doing at the moment is a defense mechanism. They're doing it because so many people are waking up. So many people are wanting to step outside of the system because they've just got to keep ramping it up as much as they can. More wars, more control, more laws, more everything they can to try to control us because it's all they've got. It's all they've got. And, I mean, they wouldn't be doing this if they didn't have to. They've been controlling humankind quite comfortably for many hundreds of years, many thousands of years probably. And it's got to the point now where they're really, really ramping up this control grid. And it's taking a lot of effort for them to do it. I mean, we're being bombarded from every possible angle. I mean, with the electromagnetic control grid, the chemtrails, the spraying, the food additives, the television, the propaganda, the education, everything that they're doing. I mean, they're going to an enormous amount of effort to try to lock us down, which shows how powerful we are. And it's all a defense mechanism. And personally, I don't think they'll ever lock human consciousness down. I don't think they'll ever control us. It may get worse yet, but it won't, they won't ever be able to control human consciousness. We're just too creative. We can create whatever reality we want. And the more they attempt to lock us down, the more people they wake up. So it all serves a purpose. But yeah, it's absolutely a defense mechanism. They'd be much happier if they were just bumbling along the way they have been for the last few hundred years and everybody was just in their little days. But that's not happening anymore. People are beginning to see how powerful they are and they're beginning to step up.
Mm. Paddy, one more question, excuse me. Max, we've been talking recently about the robotics and how advanced they're getting every day, and they will be taking away human beings' jobs very soon. I mean, transport and truck driving jobs, which employ heaps and heaps of people, will possibly be gone within 5 or 10 years. So if human beings don't wake up soon, what are we going to leave our children and grandchildren?
Well, yeah, exactly. It'll be a robot-type society, doesn't it? And this is another form of depopulation. It's another form of Agenda 21. It's another form of ethnic cleansing. You just get people in and put them in the poorhouse. Get people to the point where they believe they need jobs, they believe they need to pay to be alive, and then just take these jobs away from them, and so they get discarded by society. And society thinks it's okay to discard these people because they didn't have a job, they weren't pulling their weight, they didn't make it the way other people did it. And it's this pathological thinking that we have, we measure ourselves by our economic or social standing, and people get discarded that way. It's just another way of ethnic cleansing and depopulation. So they only need enough people to run the machine. That's all they need, and the rest of them get discarded, and that's what it's all about. And unfortunately, we have a social system that thinks it's okay for people to get discarded in this manner. It's unfortunate, but it's the programming that people are running, you know. But again, I mean, it'll wake people up. I mean, even a lot of these straight truck drivers and people that don't even look at this whole conspiracy culture, if that's what you want to call it, this alternate reality that actually exists. And this is a way of waking them up, and it'll bring the message to their backyard, and then they'll see that, hang on, these guys on the radio were actually telling the truth all of this time. It's what they do with it when they get to that point. When they get to that point, do they get angry? Do they go into revolution? Do they go into violence? Or do they go out and join a community like the Ubuntu community or something like this? Do they go out and start getting involved in their lives and realizing that there's actually a lot more to this? And that's why we need to provide a safety net for these people as they do get discarded, because more and more people are going to. And that's what the system does. And that's what it's been doing for years. It's been discarding humanity all along the way. And what our job is, I believe, as I said earlier, is to provide a safety net for these people so that when they do get discarded and when it does come home and it does hit them that reality is very different to what they thought, then they see there is a way out and they see there are positive steps they can take. They say there is a community of people who are awake and who knew this all along and who are willing to help them and willing to support them. So, you know, it'll just serve to, I mean, humanity may even split, you know, we may even find two types of humanity emerge from this, the robot crew and the real crew. You just never know where it may go. But the more robotic they make it, I mean, humankind will naturally reject this to a great degree, I think. There'll be certain aspects of humankind that will embrace it, that believe that the body computer is limiting them. They don't realize that they have a lot of inner technology they've never discovered yet. And there'll be certain parts of it that embrace it, but I think the majority of humanity will reject transhumanism. It'll reject the machine society. So it'll be interesting to see where we go, but I wouldn't be surprised if we split into two directions.
Very good. Thank you. Paddy, I lied. I've got one more question.
Okay.
Max, do you mind talking about hemp for a minute? Because it could be one of our saving plants to, apparently nature abhors having blank ground. That's why weeds grow in cracks in the pavement, etc. Hemp, apparently the seeds are edible and it would be great for humanity. Do you have any...
Well, it would. I mean, hemp, cannabis, has been our companion plant for thousands upon thousands of years. We have an endocannabinoid system in our body. Every single organ in your body has cannabinoid receptors, and they're there for a reason. And when we stopped consuming this plant as a food and we stopped using it in our daily lives, we stopped eating the seeds, we stopped burning the oils, we stopped juicing the leaves and building our homes from it and stuff and making our clothes from it, then we all started to get sick. We all started to get cancers and leukemias and all sorts of problems. And this plant is actually our companion plant. The seeds, hemp seed, cannabis seed, is actually the only whole food on the planet. It has more omega-3 than fish oil. You can eat cannabis seed alone and live in a state of perfect health. You can grow the crop anywhere. It will grow to maturity in 3 months. It will improve the soil that it grows in. So it actually improves the soil, so you can start growing other things there after you've grown hemp there. And it makes the best quality rope, the best quality paper, the best quality materials, you know, cloths, food. It's amazing. It's an absolutely incredible plant. And the banning of this plant, I believe, constitutes a crime against humanity. If this plant was decriminalized and we were allowed to grow it and use it in any way we saw fit, we would be able to replace our plastic industry, our concrete and building industries, our timber industries, make the best quality building materials out of this plant. It does so many things, it's ridiculous. I mean, the list just goes on and on of the uses of this plant. And apparently it's been banned because in our best interests, you know, they're saying this plant is dangerous. It turns people psychotic. I don't think so. They say that people who smoke it become maladjusted to society. I think that people who smoke it probably look around and go, oh, my God, what are we swimming in? And they just can't function in this corrupt world anymore. And that's why they become maladjusted to society. As Jiddu Krishnamurti once said, it's no measure of health to be well-adjusted to a profoundly sick society. And I think cannabis causes people to wake up to that. But, yeah, it's our companion plant. And any government that supports the continued prohibition of this plant really does not have the best interests of its citizens at heart. It's as simple as that. We'd eliminate all the most pollutive industries on the planet if we made this plant legal. And even legalization, I don't think it should be legalized. I think it should be decriminalized. When something is legalized, it means there's legislation surrounding it. We don't need any legislation surrounding it at all. It should be free to grow, free to use in any manner you see fit. And I think that if we were able to do that, we'd see the elimination of a great many problems that we face on the earth today. I think Rick Simpson is a friend of mine, actually. He says that that's what's wrong with our politicians, and that's what's wrong with the world, is a massive cannabinoid deficiency.
Right, and the Americans seems to be wanting to jump onto the bandwagon. They can't stop the growth of these shadow growers, but they'll open it up and claim the taxes from it. So here we go around the carousel again.
Well, yeah, they're bringing in legislation. They're realizing that people are finding out this plan is a very healing plan, and so they want to be able to step in and control it and regulate it and all that sort of stuff. And pretend that they're actually doing the right thing. We don't need any regulation around this plan at all. Nature is diverse. It's not regulated. As soon as they start regulating things, it all goes haywire from that point. And we don't want any regulation on this plan at all. And they're doing it because they have to, because the world's waking up to the fact that it's a healing plant, and we've gotten very sick since we stopped using this plant. And we don't need the government to control it, because it's a plant that has been responsible for zero deaths in its over 10,000 years of recorded use. So we don't need any regulations surrounding it at all. And so the government really needs to butt out on this one altogether.
Max, have you tried ayahuasca?
I certainly have. I've done ayahuasca ceremonies in Peru and also in Australia here. It's quite an amazing medicine.
And did a female sort of entity come down to greet you, type of thing?
Yes, I met a female entity. It's a female energy, the Lady Ayahuasca herself. It's a female spirit that resides in the kapi vine. And that's usually what you meet, is that female spirit, the Lady Ayahuasca, they call her. She could possibly introduce you to a more powerful female deity as well, who many people refer to as the Earth Mother. It's quite an amazing experience, actually. It's an introduction to the spirit realm. Ayahuasca is not a hallucinogenic drug like many people think. It's actually a medicine which opens your pineal gland and gives you access to that which exists outside visible light. It actually gives you access to the spirit realm, or it can give you access to the spirit realm if the plant so decides that that's where you should go that day. Every ceremony that I've ever done has been completely different, and so you never really know what you're going to get. But yes, it's definitely a female spirit, and everybody who experiences ayahuasca always or usually at some stage comes in contact with this same female spirit. So it's not like it's something from personal imagination. It's something that everybody comes to contact with.
Right. I recall the English writer who gets on TED Talks every now and then. He smoked marijuana for every day for about 30 years, and Mother Ayahuasca said to him he has to stop it now, and he didn't. And when he had his next ayahuasca trip, she took him to task big time. But that's another story.
Well, yeah, she'll do that. She'll do that sort of thing. I mean, if you go to visit with her and she gives you instructions, or you know, you go there with a certain intention, asking a certain question, she'll give you the answers that you need, but then it's up to you to apply these answers to your life. She won't just go and heal you. It's your choice to heal yourself, should you wish to do so. But there's been many people that have cured addictions and all sorts of things and all sorts of emotional trauma in their lives through ayahuasca experiences. So, yeah, it can be highly beneficial.
I would like to talk a little bit more on that, if we could, Max, on you know, many different cultures, especially the indigenous peoples across the globe. They've all had their sacred herbs that they use in ceremony to connect with the spiritual realm, so to speak. This is lacking in today's cultures, and it has been systematically wiped out as the indigenous cultures across the globe have been. And this is it speaks more to the validity of the use of these herbs to make that connection to strengthen one's inner self, one's heart, mind, and spirit, the joining of the three. Do you feel this way, too, that there are many, many different herbs and plants that are used for this, and that they should be brought back for ceremonial use to connect spirit. I know that we're dealing a lot now with frequencies that we're being bombarded with. I think this is purposeful to cause a break in our ability to connect spiritually. Even those of us who have that connection find it sometimes difficult to manifest our mind and our heart and our spirit in the right place to go into this place where we speak with our ancestors, where we receive guidance, where we heal ourselves, where we can send this frequency and energy to those we love and across the globe even. The frequencies that we're being bombarded with today, the Wi-Fis, the smart meters, all of these, the cell phones, all of these things are directly antagonistic to this process that we once did, you know, on a natural basis through the indigenous cultures. They've gone a long way to wiping us out, to wiping our memories even of the use of these herbs. Do you think that this knowledge that we have and that was known to our peoples, our indigenous peoples across the globe, this is the reason why they have been so easily able to get into our minds to cause this derision between who we are and where we come from?
Oh, yeah, we're only experiencing such a small bandwidth of reality. We don't really know what's going on at all. We're only really experiencing things from a five-sense perspective. And many people will argue that that's all there is. But there isn't. There's actually a lot more than that. And, you know, all of these plants and all of these things, I mean, these are hugely beneficial to humankind, hugely beneficial to human consciousness. I think a lot of them were put on this earth to give us the opportunity for growth, to give us the opportunity to discover our own creative potential and discover ourselves and discover the inner world and the outer world, to discover the spirit world. You know, I think that many of these things are very, very beneficial for humankind. And I think it's a great crime that we've had governments which have outlawed these substances and caused us to step away from anything which may help us think outside of the box. I mean, they don't want people thinking outside the box. All of these sorts of things are a threat to the control grid because they cause people to discover their own power, and that's what they don't want. They don't want you thinking that you're powerful at all. You're just a little cog in the big machine who must walk this way and step within these lines and go through this door and do this stuff and do what you're told every day. And it's all about supporting the economic model. So it's completely removed us from ourselves, the outlawing of these substances and these plants. I think they're all there for a reason. This is why all cultures have them. All cultures have their own particular substances they use to access the spirit realms. The shaman of each of these cultures do this. And the shaman were very important in all cultures because the shaman used to recognize the psychopaths in cultures. And they would weed the psychopaths out, make sure these people never got to positions of power. And that's a lot of the reason why these substances are banned as well. Because these substances will expose psychopaths and sociopaths. You find a lot of psychopaths and sociopaths won't like to go and do things like ayahuasca. And if they do, they'll probably only do them once. They won't ever do them again because they show themselves up for what they are. And if they're forced to face themselves, and they don't want to do that. That's the last thing people want to do is face themselves with these substances. And that's why many, many psychopaths and sociopaths won't ever use them. So yeah, it's been a great crime, the loss of these traditions. But I think they're coming back. And a lot of reason we're seeing people coming out and bringing ayahuasca and these, other substances to the world now as well is because they know that white man needs a crash course in rediscovering his connection to the earth and rediscovering what reality is all about. Because otherwise we will destroy our habitat, will destroy this planet's ability to support human life if we don't pay attention now. So a lot of these shaman and a lot of these tribal cultures are bringing these medicines out now because they know that we need them. Because if we don't get this crash course, we will continue until we've ruined this place. You know, we won't ever destroy the earth, but we will destroy the Earth's ability to support human life. So we'll destroy our own habitat. That's what we'll do. The Earth will eventually recover, but we won't. So if we want the experiment to go in a more positive direction, we need to start really looking at it and really start looking at what our place in this experiment is. And it's got to come down to all people. People have got to realize that the government isn't going to save them. The system isn't going to save them. It's up to us. We've got to change our heart space. We've got to step into our power ourselves. That's all we have to do. And we've got to start questioning authority and step into our own divinity. You know, if we don't do that, then nothing's going to change. It's got to come down to the individual changing their center and applying themselves to the world in which they live. If we do that, then we change the world in a day. But we've got to step up and pay attention now.
I agree wholeheartedly. And, you know, it seems that we've seen, you spoke earlier about how this agenda that goes far beyond just this century or the century before that or the century before that or the century before that. This has been going on. The manipulation of man has been going on for a very, very long time. The introduction of religion, the introduction of the monetary system, all of these things brought in to bring us to this point where we find ourselves today. It's no mistake. There's no era that we wound up here. This was the agenda all along. Where do you see it going from here if we cannot come together and end this cycle in this time that we have now? What does the future hold that you can see on that level?
Well, the thing is, I mean, people would say it'll be a control grid, and to many degrees it will be a control grid, but the control grid will only last a certain amount of time. If we continue to support this economic model, like I said, the result will be the destruction of this planet's ability to support human life. So even the control grid won't last that long. If we don't pay attention and we don't rein this system in, it will end up destroying the human race. That's its only possible outcome. That's the only possible outcome of this economic model, is the destruction of all life on this planet, or the destruction of this planet's ability to support life. That's what this economic model will do. So that's really the question. Do we want life or do we want death? And it's just going to continue to get worse until we wake up to ourselves. I mean, that's the ultimate result of this system. That will be the ultimate result of this system. There'll be a control grid that lasts for a while, may last for a few generations, but eventually we won't survive ourselves if we don't wake up to ourselves. And that's really the degree that we've taken it to. You know, it's gotten that serious. So, I mean, I do what I do because I see we have so much potential to do something else, something other than what we're doing. But if we do destroy ourselves, if we do destroy this planet's ability to support us and support life, well, so be it. Maybe it's best that we do that. If this is the best we're going to do, maybe it's best that we do that. And because we don't want to go and blow a hole out of the universe, which is what we'll do if we manage to go out and colonize space, under this present state of consciousness, that's what we do. But I don't think this present state of consciousness will allow us to ever go out and colonize space or leave this Earth. I think this is the opportunity that we've got, and we will either destroy ourselves or we'll wake up to ourselves. I don't have a stake in the outcome either way. I can see that it would be far better for us to embrace our potential, but if we don't, then we don't. And that will be the ultimate result. The control grid will only last a little while. I have no fear of the control grid. We're already living in a control grid. It's just getting more and more in your face as it becomes more blatant. It's as it becomes more, you know, more locks us down more and more. It's becoming more in our face, but it already exists. It's already there. So I don't have any fear of it coming. It's already here. My only fear would be for us to not embrace our potential. And it wouldn't really be a fear, it'd be more of a sadness or disappointment that we didn't choose to embrace our potential and go in a different direction. That's what I see. We'll either do it or we won't. I don't have any fear either way.
Well, I see a future that you know, from my culture, we look to 7 generations beyond us, that we are the caretakers, and that we have to provide the next 7 generations with a basis to which they can continue on. I see a future that has nothing to do with the control grid. I see a future that has such promise that our children grow up creative and are able to show us and do things that we haven't even been able to conceive, creating a beautiful world full of abundance, full of promise, and new technologies that have no harmful effects, a new way of communicating with each other that go far beyond divisions that we have now in culture. I see a future where we are all on the same page as far as bringing this health and abundance, and that is our main goal in life, that money doesn't play a part in it, that money has no place in our lives, that there's no need for corporations to be greedy, there's no need for education to be manipulative, that our children are free to express and to be where our children are asked, what do you want to learn today, instead of being told what they will learn and what they will not. That's the future that I would like to aspire to, and I see it as being possible. I see more and more every day that changes are happening within our children, and they are responding to what we teach them. I think that is where our hope truly is within the minds and the hearts of our children. I think that we should remember that there was a time when families were united and that they were bonded together as one unit, that they made a complete cycle within themselves. There used to be a time when generations were housed together, and one took the responsibility up that was given to them and carried it forward and passed it on. I think this is the teaching that has been lost from all our peoples. We no longer look at our elders as being wise, as being able to teach our children. We no longer look at the mothers as the sacred center of life. We no longer look at our fathers as being warriors of the family, not warriors of death. These concepts are gone from our cultures. Even the indigenous people and my culture, I think this is what we need to bring forward to change this present that we are in and to bring the future forward. I don't feel that it's that far away. I believe that we are right on the crux. And I do believe, like you, that it does not take everyone, and that we could never expect everyone to see a life without a control, without someone overseeing, someone checking and balancing. But I do believe that there is a way for the rest of us, without control, without government, and without systems, to move within our own communities and to form within our own communities solid and purposeful relationships that lead us, you know, in a better place, in a better direction. I don't want to peddle the fear that is all around us. I want to put out the positive message that we do have a place in the future, and that place will be a beautiful and inspiring to any anyone outside our, you know, I want people to look at Earth from another planet and say, oh, I want to go and I want to experience those people. I want to experience that type of life. I want to see that, and I want my children to believe in that. And I think that is the most important thing that we need to do right now, is go to our children and make sure that it is instilled within them that they are connected to each and every individual on this earth, and that they have a responsibility to express their own creativity, their own individuality, their own desires, whatever they may be, their own search for knowledge, and to seek it out. How do you feel about the children and what we can do to possibly strengthen them for the next seven generations?
Well, yeah, lead by example in what we do. I mean, the children are everything. They really are. And I think this is one of the most important times in human history. And I think it's a hell of a time to be alive. It really is. It's a wonderful time to be alive, because this is the time in history when the mechanism has been laid bare for all to see. It's never happened before in human history. And we have an opportunity here to bring the whole thing down simply by being aware of its existence. That's all we have to do. And that's what will lead us into a state of abundance. And the children are the future. But yeah, unfortunately, our children are being led into a virtual world. They're being led into a virtual reality. And they're not listening to their elders, because we've got a society which is essentially an adolescent culture, which is used to exalt youth. If you look at television, you look at the media, it's always about the young, beautiful people. There's very little respect for elders. We put them in old people's homes, and we don't listen to what they have to say. But I think that it's shifting again as well. I mean, with a lot of the festivals that I've been going to and speaking at lately, I'm seeing a huge respect for elders coming out at festivals. I'm seeing that the youth of today are realizing that the elders do have a lot to offer them. And they are realizing that they are our future, and they do need to pay attention. And I think many people are. Many people are beginning to pay attention. I'm seeing a huge increase in young faces at many of my talks that I do around the planet. A lot of young kids are coming and listening now. And I get a lot of emails and a lot of correspondence from young kids that are very grateful of the information they've got from the shows. So I think it's all shifting. I really do. But I think it's one of the most important times we've ever had in human history. If we look at the history of the world, I don't think we've ever been in a situation like this before. I don't think we've ever been in a situation where we've had these type of opportunities right here at our fingertips for real change to come about. And that's why it's such a great time to be alive. It's such an important time. And I'm really glad that I'm here. I'm really glad that I'm out on the front line. I'm really, really glad and really pleased to be participating, you know.
I have to agree, it is a wonderful time to be alive. If you ever wanted to know if you were, this is the time to figure that out, you know. You know, it used to be there were matriarchal societies, especially in my culture, that were the leaders of the people. And there were, I don't know if you've heard of the Clan Mother Laws, and things like this. Do you feel that a return to the matriarchal societies, the matriarchal way of life, would be a benefit and take us faster to the place that we want to be, a place of truth and of health and abundance?
It would certainly help. I think we need a balance between the two. I think people need to rediscover their own divinity. There's certainly been a lot of repression of the divine femininity, the divine feminine over many centuries. The divine feminine has been suppressed, and we found it coming back to a large degree. But in the process, we're finding men are being encouraged to get in touch with their divine feminine to the degree that it's created a whole lot of fluffy little men who have kind of lost contact with their divine masculine. So I think we need both. I mean, the patriarchal system we've got in place at the moment has nothing to do with the divine masculine, has nothing to do with any type of divinity at all. I think we need a balance in both of it. I think we need a return of the warrior spirit in the men. But the warrior spirit isn't a spirit that goes out and goes to war and goes to battle. The warrior spirit is one of integrity, one that chooses to stand in what is right and abide by its own moral compass. I mean, this is what we need. I think we need more respect towards a matriarchal system, and women need to have a greater say, but from the perspective of the mother in the woman, the nurturer, the nurturing ingredient in the woman. This is what we need. But we need a return to the divinity of both sexes. We really do. We need people to rediscover their own divinity and realize that there's a balance between the two that needs to be reached.
Max, as you were saying, there was always the place for the warrior, which was a divine place, as you spoke. They carried the tribe in times of peace. They made sure that the children were cared for, that the elders were cared for. They did what needed to be done to strengthen the tribe and to keep the tribe strong. It was not about picking up a spear and going out to war. That was always the last resort, and the clan mothers, they would decree if it was ever needed, and then the chief would take the message to the people, and then the warriors, and there would be councils. War was never anything that was even thought about on a glib nature. They took our land, we're going to go and take it back. You know, there was always, they reached out first in discussion. They reached out to try and find resolution to any matters. This is a society that was ruled by the clan mothers, so to speak, and the clan mothers ruled with a gentle hand, as Max said, as nurturers, because they were empathetic to the needs of everyone, not that just those who were part of their tribe, but every other nation and tribe, and it worked really well, the system that was set up. And the warriors had a place that was sacred, that they were honored to be in. The warriors today that pick up guns and go to war and shoot, they have no sense of true honor to self. They place their honor in a government or a flag or an institution that has nothing to do with them. And so they come home hollow inside. They have no heart for what they've done, and they come home and are confused because they stepped out of their role as warriors, even though they're called warriors today. It's confusing, and I think it is part of the reason why we have so much confusion today, why these men and women are going to war and coming home so damaged psychologically. Because they are stepping out of their roles and taking on this falsity of warrior, and there's no justification for them. They see no validity in taking the lives of women and children, and they have to carry this in their heart, and it's a wound that can't be healed. It's not something that you can give them a pill and it'll go away. It's not something that they can go to counseling for and find its place, because there is no place for it. So I agree, not only are men seeking out the feminine side in the wrong way, but they are forgetting their place as warriors and what that truly means, the definition of a warrior. But then, Max, all definitions have been adulterated. They turn everything upside down. Right is wrong, and black is white, and all of these things, as a way of destroying that inner knowing, that inner strength of purpose, of self-validation.
Oh, absolutely. They hijack everything. They hijack all the language. They've stolen all the good phrases. I was mentioning in a talk the other day that very soon, I mean, you start talking about sustainability, I know, Agenda 21, you start talking about how we need to get people together with a common purpose. Oh, no, the common purpose group. I mean, all of these things, pretty soon, the only way we're going to be able to convey any type of revolution to each other will be via sign language, because all of the words have been co-opted, and everybody's scared of conveying anything to anybody else because they may use some word that some New World Order person used once. It's absolutely ridiculous. But it's gotten to that stage where everything has been co-opted. All the ideas have been co-opted. All of our means of communicating any type of these things to each other have been co-opted. So really we've got to start looking at what's in our hearts and start looking at our actions and apply the warrior spirit to our actions. You know, the warrior spirit, like you were saying, it's nothing to do with war. It's to do with integrity. It's about doing the right thing in all that you do. That's what it's about, and that's what we've lost. And about stepping up and protecting our families and being the warrior in your family, being the strength in your family, protecting your woman, protecting your children by simply doing what is right and questioning authority in the right way. But doing that in a state of integrity as well. You don't want to go out there and, you know, attack these politicians and attack these police officers. Simply deal with the man within the uniform. Don't deal with the uniform. Deal with the person within the uniform and approach it from an attitude of integrity, and you'll find that you'll get a lot further. And that's what we can do with this system as well. If we simply stand up and ask why, then the system will start fumbling over itself and falling over itself to provide these answers for us that it can't provide. But we need a respectful community to stand up and ask these questions in mass. And that will only happen if people have found their true warrior spirit and are prepared to act in integrity and prepared to act in a state of respect for themselves and respect for other people. I really believe that if people don't respect other people, it's because they don't respect themselves, because they don't really know themselves. Once you truly know yourself and truly respect yourself and truly see the perfection of yourself, with any flaws you may have, you're still perfect at being you, so you still have this seed of perfection, and everybody has it. And when you can see this in yourself, then it causes you to respect other people by default. You know, as soon as you respect yourself truly, then respect for others comes by default. And that's what I believe. So people need to do the inner work. They need to look within themselves to the degree where they can respect other people. And it's so simple then. It's so simple for us to stand up and make positive change. It really is. And we don't even need to have a community that is completely awake. We just need to have a community that respects themselves enough to respect other people. That's the key to the whole thing, I think. And we can do this. We can help other people discover this in themselves by simply respecting ourselves and changing the way we interact with people. You know, because it does. It rubs off. When you start respecting people around you, it rubs off. They start respecting you as well. And it begins to change their lives. It begins to change the world around you if you simply operate in a manner of respect. And that's where it all comes from. And that's where we can lead to great things, I think. It's this simple things like this in our everyday lives, which is how we're going to change the world. And we need to change it quickly. So we need to really step up to the plate and think, well, what can I do? What can I do to change things? And really, it's got to come down to respect. Because if you apply this to everyday situations and everybody that you come into contact with, then the world has to change. It has to, you know.
It's apparent to me that people researching the free man movement and wanting to challenge the courts and their name and blah, 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 that they're walking into the lion's den and the powers that be in the courtroom will twist and connive around and simply destroy these people. Would you agree?
To a large extent, yes. I think the free man movement has been highly beneficial in exposing the fiction to people, but you're not going to find a remedy in the free man movement. The system isn't there to provide a remedy to you. And even with the whole name game thing, you know, lose the name, win the game, this is not a remedy. This is a useful tool that you can use to navigate yourself through the system, but you're not free simply because you've lost your name. You're free when they stop asking you for your name. And, you know, it's a useful tool, again, for exposing the fiction, but people who go down this pathway are expecting these people to play by their own rules. They're expecting that it's kind of like a game of chess, and they've found the checkmate move. And that these people actually care whether you believe you're free or not. They'll let some people get through it. They'll let some people navigate their way through it and find their way through it. But when it gets down to the point where too many people find out about it, well, they've got all the guns and they'll just change the playing field because that's what they do. You know, they don't play by their own rules, and they don't care whether you find a loophole and find your way through the system. You know, it doesn't work all the time anyway. I mean, you can't lose the name in Palestine. These people don't have birth certificates. They don't even have a country to have a birth certificate to be registered to. So you can't call out and say, look, I don't have a name. You can't drop that bomb on me because the bombs fall anyway. That's the thing. Now, these people don't play by their own rules. It's useful to exposing the fiction, but the key word is fiction. We've got to realize that it's a fictional reality, and the only real remedy we're ever going to find is the remedy that comes with an empowered community, and that's only going to come through respect, and that's why it always comes back to that for me.
Yeah, you can't exactly walk into the thieves' den and expect to walk out with your pockets still intact, right?
Well, no, I mean, these people don't play by their own rules. I mean, it exposes the fiction. It's been useful for that. But again, why are you know, people go in there with this anger? They want to go in, they want to put the judge in their place, they want to go in and think that I'm free. I've found the mechanism that makes me free. And it's what I call sovereign narcissism, because you're not free while the rest of the world is still enslaved. There's no remedy in this system. The only remedy that it will ever exist is in your heart. And you've got to have the strength of numbers in order to do it. I mean, you can find your way through, you know, how to navigate your way through it, and that's all very well, and it's all very good to know these things and to know how to navigate through it. But if you try to do it from a perspective where you're going in there to attack the system will pull you down, chew you up, and spit you out. That's what it does. You've got to do it from a manner of respect. It's always got to come down to respect. Even when you're dealing with this system, it's got to come down to respect.
So, Max, when you're challenged by a policeman, for example, and he wants to know your name, do you simply say, I am man, which I've heard you say before?
I have done so. It depends on the situation I'm in. If I'm in a situation where I'm in a crowd of people, and there's a lot of people around me, and there's cops there that are trying to get jurisdiction over me, I'll play a few games with them, and I won't give them jurisdiction because I've got a large crowd around me to witness it. If I'm on the side of the road, I get pulled up by two or three cops, and they want my license, and they want my name, I just say yes sir, no sir, three bags full sir, because I'm on the side of the road, there's three of them, and there's one of me, and they can do whatever they want, and they will. And I'm only interested in getting out of their jurisdiction, getting out of their custody and away from their company as quickly as possible. If I'm ever in a position where I have to go to court, well, I'll deal with things in my own way in the court system. But I won't ever try to get into an argument with a police officer on the side of the road. I won't ever become a smart ass and start mouthing off at these people. I pick my fights. You know, if I'm in a situation where I've got a lot of backup around me, yeah, I might walk the line a little bit, and I might push the envelope a little bit. Now, I have done it on the side of the road, actually, when there's been someone else with me in the car. I've kind of pushed the envelope with a couple of cops on the side of the road and gotten away with it. But, you got to pick your fights and pick your arguments. I'm not so stupid that I'm going to create a scene with a couple of cops on the side of the road. And these cops, they don't care if I've got rights. They don't even know about half of this stuff. To them, I'm just a troublemaker, and they'll just do whatever they want to do because they can. So there's no point even trying to argue with these people. Most of them aren't intelligent enough to argue with anyway. I mean, the way they're screening modern cops, these guys have got IQs of about 100, 104 or 105 or something. So they're not real bright. There's no point trying to argue your rights with these guys on the side of the road. It's counterproductive, I think.
Sister, I've got one more question. How are we going to subdue the Zionist beast over there in Israel? I've heard that the Kabbalist Jews absolutely hate the Zionist power structure. Have you heard anything along those lines, Max?
Yeah, well, the Zionism is very anti-Semitic. It really is. Zionism has nothing to do with Judaism, and Zionism will bring about its own demise. The actions of Israel in Palestine recently have created millions upon millions of new Palestinian activists out of people who'd never even heard of Gaza or Palestine before. So the actions of Israel will bring about its own demise, and it's already happening. We're seeing this already. The world is paying attention to Israel now due to this latest incursion into Gaza, the sheer brutality that they showed, the utter disregard for life. And it's just not going to last, I don't think. I don't think there's anything we really have to do to bring about the demise of Israel. I think it's doing a fine job all on its own. It's just going to continue imploding until the people of Israel wake up to themselves a little bit, realize that they need to live in harmony with their neighbors. They need to live in harmony with the people of Palestine. They can't just exterminate all these people. And they can't deal with a rogue government. They can't allow Zionism to destroy Judaism and destroy Israel, which is what it will do. And it'll bring about its own demise, I think, and it's well underway.
We often play Ken O'Keefe on our radio show. He's an awesome guy. Where did that connection come from?
Well, we just kind of hooked up. I don't really know how it happened. I think I might have contacted him. I saw one of his interviews, and we just ended up in contact. We ended up chatting a bit, and I usually stay at his house when I go to the UK. He lives in London, so it gives me a place to kind of land, which is really good. We snuck into Gaza together in 2012. We became quite good friends over the years. He's an interesting character, Ken, very outspoken.
One of the things that I find very telling about the situation in the Middle East as it is now, you have all this unrest, ISIS, Al-Qaeda, all the other sects of quote, terrorists that are active in that area, and you have Israel bombing the Palestinians on a constant basis, yet no one has gone after Israel from any of these so-called terrorist organizations. I find that very telling in itself. And also, there's a lot of Christians that are of a mind, because of the biblical prophecies, which they are trying, as far as I can see, Max, they are trying to fulfill. These governments and their actions are directly trying to purvey to the people that this is the revelations coming, even with the wars and the rumors of wars and Russia, China, the U.S., all of these things that are happening right now. The lack of the Muslim community in outrage over Israel after, you know, knowing how they feel about Israel, all of this in direct manipulation, trying to get consensus, I assume. But you have many millions of Christians who are referring to the biblical passages in this revelation, saying that this has to happen. So they're stepping down and they're allowing it to happen, thinking that we're going to have the second coming. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, theater for the masses. I think that it's a script. They're just following the revelation script. I think that's what it's for. People are just sort of buying into it. People don't realize there's a large Christian population in Gaza Strip as well. When they go in there and bomb Gaza, they're actually bombing Christians as well as Muslims. You know, people don't realize this. But I think Israel is just trying to run through the revelation script. That's what it's all about. But it's a script. It's not a prophecy at all. It's a script. I really believe that.
But yet what we have here is a staunch religious sect of Christians who for no other reason, will never allow any other thought to come into their mind that this might be direct manipulation. This goes to the core of their very beliefs of their religion. So this is another direct manipulation of the governments and things that are happening. If there was a way to reach these Christians that are adamant about the fact that this must happen, everybody stand down, allow them to create this mass genocide against these people, and are actually expecting Israel to come under attack and under fire. They're more or less, we talked about, we don't have very much time left. We've got about 8 minutes. But we talked just a little bit about frequency and manipulation of frequency, yet we have the ability to create a frequency and an energy flow that can change this tide within ourselves, we have the ability to raise the vibration, so to speak. Is there a way that we can change this prospect of apathy towards the Palestinians? I wake up every morning and I give an affirmation that I am grateful, that I am thankful for the life that I've been given and for the blessings that I have in my life. And I've seen the energy do its work. The universe opens up and things happen. Is this possible for us to do if we all came together, or not all of us, but the majority of us, if we could put out this vibration and this frequency? Don't you believe that we could, or do you believe that we could change the mindsets of these people?
Look, I think we could probably change a lot, but I don't think we could change the mindset of psychopaths, because psychopaths are psychopaths. Psychopaths can't be cured. That's the problem. You know, there's no good looking at our leaders and the people that run the World Bank and David Cameron and these sort of people and say, look, we're going to appeal to their sense of decency, because they don't have one. And that's the thing. I mean, if we've got enough people to change their energetic state, yeah, I think we could change reality. I think we could. It's an energetic universe. We could change reality if people change their energetic state. But there is so many people that are in a negative energetic state who aren't even aware that they're having this electromagnetic conversation that's ongoing every day, every minute of every day. They're not even aware that this conversation is happening. So it's a big ask. It's a tall order. I think we could do it. I think that the power of good would be far more powerful than the power of darkness or the power of bad. And I think that it wouldn't take as many people in a good vibration as it would to combat the people in a negative vibration. But it's still a tall order. You know, we can put ourselves in that good vibration and that good energetic state. And then we can choose to apply that to the world around us. We can choose to apply that to the people we interact with every day. And I think that's how we make the change. I think that's how we get other people resonating on the same level as we do, by leading by example in what we do and by applying ourselves to the world around us. I think that's how we do it. It's a fine line, but we've got to realize that we're here in a physical world for a reason. Even though it's an energetic universe, we're here in physicality for a reason. And the way we interact with each other is emotionally. It's emotional interaction. Every interaction we have with other people is really an emotional interaction. It's based on your emotional and energetic state. And that's where we can make a difference to the people around us, is by realizing that it's an emotional conversation that we're having with people. It's an emotional connection that we're making with people. Everybody. Doesn't matter whether it's just someone in the shop you're buying a newspaper from. It's still an emotional interaction that you're having. So that's how we change things. We can apply these things to the world in which we live. We can't just do it by sitting in a state of meditation, by making sure we're in a high vibrationary state. If we're just there and we're locking ourselves in this state of meditation and high vibration and ignoring everything that's around us, then really, I believe the basis of this is fear. Why would we be ignoring the people around us? Why would we not be out there interacting with the world around us? It's because we're in a state of fear, because we believe we have to sit here in this state of high vibration and that may change the world. We believe the world needs changing because we're in fear of where it may be if we don't. So the whole thing really has this basis in fear. You can be in that high vibrational state and choose to interact with people, get out there and get amongst it with people, and interact with as many people as you can, but do it from the correct emotional and energetic state when you do so. I think that's how we can make a difference.
From a state of love?
Well, from a state of love, from a state of unconditional love, but from a state of not fear, from a state of possibility and potential. You know, that's why I do what I do, because I see the potential that we have. And I love because I don't fear. It isn't that I go out of my way to think, oh, aren't you beautiful to everybody that I meet. I just don't love. I just don't fear. And love is the opposite of fear. Fear is the opposite of love. If you don't have fear in your life, then you're in a state of love, aren't you? It doesn't mean that you have to be fluffy about it, you know. But I'm in a state of not fear for anything. I don't have any fear for the outcome. I don't have any stake in the outcome of where we may go. But I can see the beauty and the wonder and the attraction of infinite potential of human consciousness. And to me, that is an incredibly exhilarating thing. It's an incredibly exhilarating feeling to see this potential, that this possibility of the infinite potential of human consciousness, because it is infinitely potential. And to me, that's a wonderful thing. And to me, that's what inspires me. I find it incredibly inspiring to see this potential. And so that's why I do what I do. And to me, that's love. To me, because it's not fear, it's love. So that's just the way I look at it, you know.
I hope. I have to say, that's a wonderful way to lead this segment. And Max, I thank you so much for joining us tonight. And I hope that after your trip to Palestine, you might join us again to tell us what you found. And we'll do our work on this end. We'll bring the people together, and we will continue to do what we do, and you continue to do what you do. And I know the world will be a better place simply because we are in it. You know, we've got to learn that we are responsible for what we bring to the table. We are responsible for what we create in life. And as you said, respect goes a long way. Not respect of person, but respect of spirit, respect of individual validity. And that's what we need to do, is bring empowerment through self-validation. Thank you, Max, so very much for joining us tonight. And I look forward to hearing from you again.
My pleasure, Patty. Thanks for having me on.